My name is Jeff Masakovic. I'm a parish pastor. I serve the Mayville Grand Lutheran Parish in Mayville, North Dakota. A major part of my ministry is listening. Listening in various kinds of situations. Listening to people on the street as I walk to work. I call it ministry on Main Street. Listening to people in my office. Listening to people respond as I teach confirmation or Sunday school. Listening to people in their homes. It didn't take me very many years in the ministry to discover that all of my education taught me how to communicate, how to talk, but not how to listen. And maybe you've had the kinds of experiences too where you've visited with someone or walked out of a room or left a conversation and you had the feeling that that person was trying to tell me something. What did I miss? What were they saying? And so a few years ago, I decided to take a communication course that was being offered in our synod. And one of the skills that was taught at that course was neurolinguistics, something I'd never heard of before. But it caught my fancy, and I got interested in it. And so on sabbatical, now here at Holden, which I've been for the last month, I have been doing some reading in the area of neurolinguistics. And the program director asked me if I would take some time to share some of what I have learned about neurolinguistics. I'm still trying to integrate the stuff that I've read in the last month, but the basics I think I can communicate to you, and I think you'll find it a fascinating kind of listening skill. The title of this is Do You Hear What I Hear? An Introduction to Neurolinguistics. It could have very easily been Do You See What I See? Or Do You Feel What I Feel? I happen to be an auditory person, so I entitled it, Do You Hear What I Hear? Auditory words. Those of you that are not extremely auditory may find that a very strange and unsettling kind of title. And you'll discover why as we talk more about neurolinguistics. I don't pretend to be an expert in neurolinguistics. It's not my field. But it still fascinates me. And I will attempt to answer any questions you have as we go along. I'd like to just introduce you to the basics. All of us, all the time, are receiving sensory material. Through our eyes, through our ears, through our nose, through our taste buds, through nerve endings, we're always receiving sensory material. We may not be aware of it. Were there any kinds of sensory data that struck you when you came in the room this afternoon? Anything in particular that stood out?
It was quiet.
It was quiet.
It's cold.
You saw the picture, okay? A visual response, a kinesthetic response, an auditory response. Okay. When I came into this room, even though I'm a very auditory person, I noticed the dimness of the lights. It's very dark in here. All of us are receiving information all the time through each of those three channels, through the auditory, the visual, and the kinesthetic channels. All of us, however, prefer one of those channels over the others, and so the kinds of material that arises in our conscious level is usually in the channel that we prefer. Now, all of us can communicate in all three channels, but we prefer one over the other. And so to use this skill as a listening skill, we teach ourselves to hear the language that another person is using. And the language is a clue to the channel that that person prefers. And if I can respond to you in the same channel that you prefer, immediately you will feel rapport with me. Maybe you have been to, as an example, a church council meeting, and somebody says, tell me what you heard in the worship service last Sunday. And another person responds, I don't see why that's important at all. And another person says, well, I felt really good. All three of them are talking in different channels, and they don't have a clue as to what the other person's saying. So they talk in circles for an hour trying to figure out what was going on at the worship service. One was an auditory response. Tell me what you heard. Another one's a visual response. I didn't see. Another one is kinesthetic. I felt pretty good, or I felt lousy. Okay, so what we want to do is try and bridge to the language patterns that the other people use. And there are some ways that we can do that. If any of you are teachers, some of this may be very familiar. You've probably been taught that some children learn primarily through what they hear auditorially. And so you talk to those people. When you want to give that child an instruction, you talk to them and you tell them what to do. Some people are very visual, and so if you want them to follow directions, you write the directions on the board so they can read them themselves, or you show them. Another person is very kinesthetic. That's the one that you would show. Maybe take them by the hand and show them how to do whatever it is you want to do. And so as a teacher, you have to develop ways of communicating to all three kinds of students, and it's very important to discover quickly in what channels your students like to communicate or communicate best. The visual person, of course, and I have written some words on the board. These certainly is not an all-inclusive list of the words that may be used in either one of these channels, but the visual person would use words like see, look, clear, picture, focus, perspective, viewpoint, reflect, frame, show, appear. All words that have to do with vision or seeing. The auditory person, hear, sounds like, I tune into, that really clicked with me. Harmonize, tell, listen, something tells me, says, echo. The kinesthetic person is the person who these are senses too, and you notice that we haven't talked about smell, we haven't talked about feeling. That comes under here. Feeling, grasping, handle. Oh yeah, I got a handle on that now. There's a kinesthetic kind of response. In touch, firm, contact, sensitive, pick upon. Take a stand. Those are all kinesthetic kinds of vocabulary words. And these words that I have on the bottom here, words that we use a lot, those are unspecific. We could use those in any one of the channels. Words like aware, be, believe, consider, contemplate, know, learn, ponder, remember, respectful, sense, think. Could be talking, you know, out of any channel. So what neurolinguistics helps us to do is to understand the why. Why, for example, in a specific time or place, do you remember a certain event or story that maybe you hadn't thought about or heard about or even considered for years, maybe never before? Why all of a sudden does that come up to your consciousness? Neurolinguistics helps us understand some of that. And neurolinguistics helps us understand the how. How do we access those stories from our subconscious? How do we bring them to consciousness? What kind of language do we use to talk about these events? Neurolinguistics is defined as listening for and responding to the dominant mode of a speaker's language. Okay? Listening for and responding in the dominant mode of a speaker's language. So that puts the responsibility for communication upon myself, the listener. Let's talk a little bit about the visual people, first of all. In psychological terms, the visual person would probably be right brain dominant, if you're familiar with those kinds of phrases. And when the visual person is reading a book, for instance, they will visualize the event in their mind as they read. The visual person will notice the pictures on the wall when they walk into a room. Notice the way the chairs are situated. Will remember what they wore in a specific occasion, what it looked like. Will walk through the woods and see everything, things that I don't see at all. See the fungi growing on the wood. See the pine needles arranged in some intricate design, and I'd walk right past them. The visual person is usually a very insightful person. Walks into church and immediately sees that the candles are crooked and would like them all straight, or the banners are hanging crooked, or the pictures on the wall are askew. Visual people notice those kinds of things. They're always interested in how things look. Banners, flowers, candles, decorations during worship are very important to the visual person. And the visual person tends to sit right in the middle of the church. They like to be able to see everything that's going on. Don't want to miss a thing. Or the middle of the classroom, if you're a teacher. Some students feel very comfortable sitting in the middle of the class. They're probably visual. Get a good perspective on everything that's going on. In our community, you can also hear the dominance of the person in how they say hello, or how you greet one another, or how you say goodbye. A visual greeting would be, "It's good to see you." I don't know how many of you typically use that kind of greeting. Or, "See you later." A visual person saying goodbye. Now, sometimes, like in our community, "see you later" is the typical goodbye. And so in our community, I would not use that as a clue as to whether somebody is visual or auditory or kinesthetic, because everybody says "see you later." The auditory person is generally left brain dominant. Usually has a very hard time getting in touch with their feelings. That's one of the things I've been working on with NLP.
What's that?
NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, neuro-linguistics. The auditory person, as I mentioned, prefer the auditory channel. Well, I don't have a clue as to what's going on in my body most of the time. Just not aware of it. It has to be really obvious. My wife, however, is very kinesthetic, and boy, any little change in her body, she knows it immediately. The auditory people usually don't. Auditory people have a really tough time with huggy-touchy-feely kind of people. You know, the ones that want to hug you all the time. Or the ones that want to stand right at your nose when they're talking to you. Well, we just back off so quick. We don't feel comfortable with that. We can learn, and I've been learning to be comfortable with that, but For the most part, we don't like that. When we go to worship, we don't care what the place looks like. We don't notice the gum wrappers and the Cheerios that are on the floor from the week before. That doesn't matter. But we want to hear the music. We want it to be beautiful. We want the choir to sing with crystal clarity and in pitch. And we want to hear the sermon. We want to hear what the pastor has to say. And if it's muffled and if we can't hear it, everything else could be perfect that day, but it's a lousy worship service because we can't hear. We tend to sit in the back of the church. It doesn't matter if we see anything or not. All we want to do is hear. And so we sit in the back of the church. So that gives you a pretty good idea what most Lutherans are, huh? We all sit in the back of the church. The sermon has always been emphasized in the Lutheran church. Don't care about the liturgy, don't care about flowers, candles, banners, nothing. We want to hear the sermon. That's what we go to church for. Most of us are auditory. Or in the classroom, the auditory people will like the back of the class. They want to hear what's going on. A typical greeting for the auditory person, how do you do? It's nice to meet you. A typical goodbye, talk to you later. It's been nice talking to you. Let's talk again sometime. Auditory people tend to say goodbye in those kinds of ways. Kinesthetic person tends to be the huggy-touchy, likes to be close to people sort of person, likes to stand nose-to-nose to people when they're talking. Usually is very much aware of their emotions, what's going on inside of their body. May not always know where it's coming from or why it's there, but is very much aware that the feeling is there. Wants the worship service to touch his or her emotions. They want to either laugh or cry or feel some sort of emotional response to the worship service. And if they do that, everything else in the service could be absolutely meaningless. But boy, if it sparks an emotion in them, it's worth it. They're the ones that love to pass the peace during worship. Most of us Lutherans, boy, we shy away from that one. Or, it's nice to meet you, you know, maybe at arm's length. Okay. The kinesthetic person loves that part of the service. The kinesthetic people, of course, then tend to sit in the front of the church. They don't want to miss anything that's going on. Or in the classroom, they'll sit in the front. Again, the kinesthetic person, if they are to greet someone, it's really good to have you with us. Or if they're going to say goodbye, catch you later, something to that effect. Okay. There any questions on the distinctions between the three basic channels through which we communicate? Auditory, visual, and kinesthetic.
Is there a way this breaks down in percentages of populations, like you mentioned the Lutheran church and a lot of auditory people there?
I'm not sure. Like I said, all three channels are available to every one of us, and we all communicate in all three. But because of past experiences, we prefer one channel over the other.
How do you classify the kinesthetic then between the left and the right hemisphere? Is it a balance between the two?
Pretty much. Probably more left. Is the left hemisphere, is that the artistic? No, the right hemisphere. The right hemisphere is the artistic, emotional. Yeah, they'd be right.
Did you say that you feel that the distinction comes about because of your past experiences, or could it be genetic?
I personally think it's past experiences. All three of us, all of us are born with all three channels wide open. For me, I can look back at how I was raised, and in my family, we were not allowed to express emotion. We were not allowed to get angry. We weren't allowed to scream and yell. My parents were not huggy persons. I never saw them cry. Even when my grandparents died, they never cried. So my kinesthetic channel was severely shut down by the behaviors that I witnessed when I was growing up. I wasn't supposed to do those kinds of things. And it's been very difficult for me to open that up again.
I guess I was wondering, maybe in terms of, say, the hearing impaired or a blind person who has one of those channels closed off, mm-hmm. if it was more or less genetic, maybe they would, maybe some of those people would have a lot more difficulty communicating because sort of their natural channel was unavailable to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the other channels would become much more open. Down here in front, okay, and then I'll get you back there.
My area is early childhood education, mm-hmm. and one of the things we always made sure we did was to introduce a new concept through each one of the channels.
Yep.
Because we never know where our children might be in their learning process, whether they learn by hearing or seeing or feeling. So we have to do them all.
You do them all, yeah. And as we move on, I'll give you some ways to figure out very quickly what the children are or what we are. Yes?
It just interested me that you're auditory, but your wife is kinesthetic. I mean, are you drawn more to the huggy, touchy person, even though you yourself don't do that?
Yeah. That's an interesting phenomena. Most of us are drawn to opposites. To one degree or another, because at least subconsciously, if not consciously, we feel that that other person can make up for our lacks. My wife has been very instrumental in opening up my kinesthetic channel. I didn't know that until a couple of years ago. She's been very instrumental in that. Yeah, Jack.
Would it be ideal to be able to use all three equally?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if I am totally a visual person and I run into a person who is totally auditory or kinesthetic, we're not going to be able to communicate unless we stay with that bottom box down there, all those unspecified kinds of things. Yes, Kathy.
Why do you think that colleges and graduate schools rely on the auditory, usually solely, as a means of transmitting information? I only heard lectures.
Yeah. I think it's because it's the easiest. It's much easier to stand in front of a classroom and read a lecture or read a paper, or simply talk, than it is to have the class get up and move around and find partners and experience things. The classes, you know, the sciences in college are the most expensive to teach because you always have to be doing things in labs. I'd like us to take a few minutes and discover, if you don't know already, what your predominant channels are, what would you like to communicate in, which channel you prefer. And there's a couple different ways we'll do that. The first one, we'll just simply use language. And so I'd like you to find a partner. It can be somebody you know or don't know, and I'd like you to take your chairs and face one another so you can talk to one another and listen to each other. Husbands and wives can do it if they want. If they don't want to do that, Okay, now A is going to be the speaker this first time, and B will be the listener. And so those of you who are listeners, hopefully you have in your mind pretty well set, you know, some of the distinctions between the three different kinds of language that we can use. A, I would like you to tell your partner about your last vacation. I'd like you to take 3 minutes, whatever comes to your mind, take 3 minutes and talk about your last vacation. B, I want you to listen to the dominant language that they use. Try and identify which channel are they talking in. Most people are going to talk in all three, but I want you to try and decide which is the dominant according to the language they use. What words did you hear? What kinds of dominant language did you hear as you were listening to that person? That's an auditory command. Okay? Listening to the dominant language is one way of figuring out what channel a person prefers and to bridge. Now, in any given sentence, a person may use two or three, you know, you may use words from the different channels. If you're really a perceptive communicator, you will pick up the first channel they said, you know, I see, use a visual word. Then at the end of the sentence, they may use an auditory word. So when you become really perceptive, you will respond the same way. You will frame your response first with a visual word, then with an auditory word. The subconscious picks up those distinctions very quickly, and rapport is established immediately. Okay, but that takes a lot of time to get that far. I'm not that far. I want to teach you another way to pick up on dominance. For visual people, this other way is absolutely incredible. So the rest of us have to work on it a bit. Any of you ever noticed how people's eyes move when they are talking? A few years ago, back in about 1975, some psychologists named Bandler and Grinder, working out of California, discovered that by watching a person's eyes, you can determine what channel they are going to be speaking in. Okay, we access information from our subconscious, bring it up to consciousness, and they discovered the way we do that is through eye movements. That somehow there's a connection between the movements in our eyes and what comes up to consciousness. Now for a right-handed person, and those of you that are left-handed, it's going to be just the opposite. Generally for a right-handed person, okay, for a right-handed person, if they tend to be visual and are going to access their information in the visual channel, the eyeballs will move up and to the side. Okay, if they come up this way, that's called visual construction. Okay, and what they're doing is they are accessing the information, they're accessing a picture, but they are constructing the picture. It's something they have not seen before, probably, and so they're constructing the picture in their mind. For example, if I asked you, what does a zebra with a giraffe's head that has green and purple stripes look like? I don't think any of you have ever seen anything like that before. And so as you try to construct that picture, your eyeballs are going to shoot up. You go any other place, you're not going to be able to picture it. They have to go that way if you're right-handed. Now, they may not go up there and get stuck there. It may be just like that, and you've got it. It may be that quick. And so you have to be very astute at watching eyes. Okay, now if in your past you have seen a zebra with a giraffe's head with whatever color stripes I said, your eyes will come up to this side, up and to the left, because you'll come up, you'll pull that picture out of your subconscious, and you know what it looked like. That's called visual remembering. You've seen it before. And so your eyes will shoot up, you get the picture, you come down, you can describe it. You know exactly what it looks like. Right? Another way to visually access information, and this is the way I normally do it. You've probably seen someone, their eyes look kind of glazed and they're looking straight ahead as if they're not seeing anything. They're visually accessing information at that point. So eyes defocused and straight ahead is another way that you can visually access information. Okay. The auditory people, their eyeballs are going to shoot out to the side. No, they both go the same way. Okay, this is an audio construct over here. I'm going to construct a sound that I've never heard before. Or I'm going to put some words together. I read a number of things. For example, I may have read a number of related kinds of things in the newspaper, or I may have heard a lecture, but I've never tried to talk about what I heard. And so as I auditorily kind of try to construct what I've heard and put it into my own words, my eyes are going to shoot out to the right. They're going to shoot out as I keep accessing this information and trying to fit it into my own words. If I'm just going to spit back something that I memorized years ago, audio remembering, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Well, I zip out to the left and I pull it in and I've got it. Okay, so that's how we access our information auditorially. Either spoke, you know, the words that we want to use, the sounds that we have heard. There is one other way that we can access information auditorially, and that is down this way. And that's an inner dialogue sort of thing, the person who's talking to themselves, you know. Both sides of the conversation going on at the same time. Their eyes will be shooting down and to the left. And maybe I didn't say it, but this is a picture of, you know, facing you. Okay, so this is the left and this is the right. Okay, so this is an auditory, this is a conversation to oneself. An inner conversation. Many of you probably talk to yourselves as you're trying to figure out a problem and figure out all the angles. Well, if I do this, then this will happen, and if I do this, then this will happen. Your eyes will be accessing that information going down and to the left. That only leaves one place for the kinesthetic people, and that's down this way. Down and to the right is where the kinesthetic people will access their information from. How did it feel the last time you walked across a driveway in bare feet and it was a rocky driveway? Your eyes are going to shoot down to the right as you remember those feelings, those little stones sticking in your feet. Taste, smell, emotions, all are accessed in the kinesthetic channel. What did the pork roast taste like yesterday at noon? Those of us that have been here for a while, well, we'll shoot down there and pull that up quick, because it's the first time we've had pork in a long time. Right. Any questions about accessing through the eyes?
Now, this is a theory, or is this?
No, this has been proven.
This has been proven.
Yeah, yeah. This has been. You're going to prove it to yourselves in a few minutes.
And it's reversed for left-handed.
Generally, it's reversed for left-handed.
And how does it help you to discriminate what someone's primary channel is?
How?
I mean, it seems like if a person's talking about a visual sort of thing, it will be
right.
I mean, whether they're visual or auditory or whatever.
Right.
You're still saying it will go up one side or the other.
Right. Yeah, we all access information from all the channels. Now, what we may do, if I asked you a specific question and it has to do with a visual sort of thing, if you're an auditory sort of person, you'll probably shoot out to the auditory side to gather what information you can. You can't find it there, so you'll go someplace else. Or, as Margaret was saying to me a little bit earlier, she's a visual person. But she listens better with her eyes closed. And I mentioned to her that probably what she is doing then is she is receiving the words through her ears, but she is making visual images about what she is hearing. And you can do that much better without any other visual stimuli coming in through your eyes. I don't know. Is that what you're doing?
Maybe so. I'm paying better attention to what I'm hearing. Otherwise, I'm looking at what's going on.
Sure. And so your visual channel is much more open and alert and active than the others. And so in order for you to concentrate on what you're hearing, you have to consciously block out all the other visual stimuli. Then you can open up and use one of the other channels. Okay. Any other questions on that?
I have a feeling that this kind of preconditions us looking at this chart, that we should respond the way you have it written on the board, you know, like, well, shall I go left or right, or is this just automatic?
It's going to be automatic. You can't control it. If I ask you what color is your car, there's only one way you can go and get that information. You're not going to find it any other way.
Well, I'm feeling like I ought to sit here and move my eyes, but not move my head, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Later on in more advanced stuff in neurolinguistics, you do learn to watch the body too, and how they move. Does the head go which way?
Yeah.
Because the eyes usually go the same way. Which way the hands go, the arms, the breathing, you know, all sorts of stuff gives you clues too. But we're just keeping it really simple today. Yes. Yeah.
This is true for all three types.
Yep.
So what were you saying about visual people, that they do this unique, you were saying?
Visual people also can access information by defocusing and looking straight ahead, like kind of a blank stare. They can also access information that way. Yes?
How about, you know, I think about the overload, noise overload. What does that do to your channel? You know,
that overloads it.
Well, but I mean you know, if you're... Say you have a text to study, and you have this noise, or you know, it must, you know, cut down on the access of what's going to go stay put.
Yeah, there's a couple of different theories about that, and I forget the exact numbers, but I'm going to exaggerate just to make the point. But for each of us at any given time, there are literally thousands of bits of sensory data that is being received in our brain. Our brain can only process maybe 10 or 15 of those bits of data at a time. And so the rest of it's just being stored away in the subconscious. We're not even aware of it. The NLP people that are really into it say that everything we have ever experienced is tucked away in our brains, but we're simply not capable of pulling it all out and sorting it all out. We can only handle so much of it. So it's like the poor guy at the Smithsonian Institute that's got all of these displays to take care of, and he's got seven buildings full of stuff that's sitting there that he just doesn't have time to take care of, and it just sits. Our brain is kind of like that. And the reason why we pull up various information at various times, and that's part of the dreaming sequence too, that, you know, we're processing information all the time, even in our dreams at night. But the reason why we may think of, say, you know, we're walking through the forest here at Holden, we've never been here before, and all of a sudden there's a sound. We don't recall ever hearing that sound before, and we start accessing all sorts of information, but it sounds so familiar, you know, somewhere we've heard it.
And
Or we see something that looks very, very familiar, and we start accessing all sorts of information, but we can't figure out where we saw it before. It's there if we could get to it. We have seen it before, in a book, in a magazine, in a movie. Matt, do you have a question or a comment? No?
Yeah, just a comment.
Okay.
When she was talking or questioning about overload, after you've been here for 6 or 7 weeks and you go on an out and go to a shopping mall or a supermarket, it's a really difficult thing to do. It's nearly traumatic because
yeah. You
just want to get out of there. It's just too much.
Yeah.
She was talking about overload.
Last trip out
and
shopping. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Walked in and walked right back out.
Yeah.
Well, that's a typical male reaction.
You don't need Holden Village for that kind of reaction, in other words, right? Yes, you had a question in the back.
Yeah, it looks then that if you look to the right, either audio or visual, you also could tell the people, if you had a benchmark, tell the people who are about to develop a lie or prevarication or something that's an untruth as they go through the construct, right?
It's very possible. Or they may have never been asked the question in quite that way before, and they're constructing their answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes?
I've heard it said that the body never lies.
That's right.
The body always tells the truth. Is that also true of the eyes?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are you aware of your eye movement? I mean, now that you've told us that, and if you ask me what color my car was, I try to think of it. Would I notice my eyes moving? Would it take somebody else to observe it?
You probably know it. You can if you're consciously thinking about it. Yeah, you can be aware of that. Yeah, very often I catch my eyes stuck in one area or the other, and I think, oh yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. What I'd like you to do is just try and experience this again with your partner. So the person who was A last time and who told the story, this time will be the listener, and will watch the other person's eye movements. And if you have a pencil and paper, you might want to draw a little face and just put a little mark every time the eye goes in a specific place. And I'd like the person who was B last time, who was the listener this time, tell the story about your last vacation.
Well, if you would like to sit here and do it again and switch parts, you
can. Well, no, I'm going to check the part here so we can find out how the tail and the students are.
By using the two methods you just learned, listening to the language and watching the eye.
Simply, these three channels are simply the way you access information from your subconscious. All of us access in all three channels. We prefer one over the others. And so all we're trying to do is figure out which channel do we prefer, which is dominant for us. Because then or the person we are visiting with. Because if we can figure out what's their dominant channel, we can switch channels ourselves and immediately establish rapport. The subconscious will do that